morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. And welcome to Information Week Live for the week of March 29th, 2015. I'm your host, Executive Editor Dave Wagner. I'm pinch hitting for our usual host, Kurt Franklin, today. Kurt found out that France just banned the use of ultra-skinny models and decided now was the time for to try a new career. As always, we start out Information Week Live with the news in 60 seconds. All the news you need in a single minute, because any more would blow your mind. Google has announced research that shows 5% of people who visit their sites have an ad injector infecting their computer. These injectors often put unwanted ads on the screens when people visit their websites. There was no comment from Google, however, on the fact that 100% of Google searches inject unwanted ads onto user screens. The driverless car might really be a thing. An Audi SUV equipped with technology from Delphi successfully made a trip from San Francisco to New York on driverless mode for 99% of the trip. No word on what music the car chose for the road trip, but I'd have picked the Proclaimers' 500 miles. Amazon has announced a new line of Wi-Fi-enabled buttons that allow you to order a single product when you run out of it. For instance, when you run out of laundry detergent, you can push a button attached to your laundry machine to get more. Now, if they could only give me a button to push when I'm too lazy to walk into the laundry room to push a button. A Pew Research study came out this week showing that 19% of Americans are highly dependent on their smartphones. It also showed that 81% of Americans lie about how dependent they are on their smartphones. And that's the news in 60 seconds. And now on to our first guest, Doug Henschen. Doug covers our big data beat for iWeek. Welcome, Doug.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here. So you had some pretty big news coming out from IBM this week. It sounds like they're making some investments into the Internet of Things.
That's right. $3 billion, they claim, over the next 4 years. IBM is pretty famous for putting billion-dollar figures, attaching billion-dollar things, figures to their investments like cognitive computing and such. But they're saying $3 billion over the next 4 years to create a separate business unit for Internet of Things. They already had introduced last fall an Internet of Things foundation on their Bluemix cloud, and that was sort of a set of APIs to help help sort of pioneers in this area sort of simplify consuming that sort of data from sensors, you know, bringing it in and filtering it and handling the speed and velocity of that. So this with the new bigger business unit, they're talking about a kind of a full-fledged cloud-based platform and sort of an ecosystem with a bunch of partners that will help companies kind of put together IoT sorts of applications.
Well, that sounds really intriguing. I know the Internet of Things is having a lot of trouble in certain ways getting off the ground. What can IBM bring to this that other companies aren't bringing?
Well, as I said, they're talking about a cloud-based platform. So, first of all, they're going to have tools and platform capabilities to handle sort of the scale of this sort of data, the velocity of this sort of data, to help with filtering and standards. I recently did a story about Microsoft, partnership with Ford, and a Ford electric vehicle spits out 25 gigabytes of data in an hour. So you really can't. You'd fill up even the biggest cloud if you took every car and took all of its data into the cloud. So part of it is going to be, filtering that data and kind of finding the right information that really can be used for some sort of meaningful insight to drive some sort of, customer service enhancement, certainly with devices. Predictive maintenance is a big sort of application. But, IBM specifically is talking about a cloud platform. They're talking about industry-specific sorts of services. They have one plan for insurance, sort of to help insurance companies figure out what kind of data they can collect from vehicles. I'm guessing teenagers speeding or something like that. what data they could connect to vehicles to sort of do smart pricing of insurance policies, for example, bringing better value, or pricing up policies where indeed you see driving that isn't consistent with a low insurance rate. And then finally, they're going to have a bunch of ecosystem partners. They already have a few, like ARM, the mobile chip maker, and AT&T, data services provider that would connect this sort of information kind of in the sky. And then they have a new one they announced this week is the Weather Company, and that's a company Information Week is very familiar with. We've kind of profiled what they have, a cloud-based data platform, and they're collecting data, weather information from all over the world, something like terabytes per hour, 20 terabytes per day, I think is the total, collecting this weather information to drive their sort of prediction. And they've been driving this and running this all on Amazon over the last couple of years. They moved it into the cloud, consolidated their infrastructure in the cloud. But the CIO, Bryson Koehler, has long said, I don't want to be dependent on any one cloud. So this is one way in which they've kind of spread their risks in being in the cloud, and they're running their B2B platform on IBM SoftLayer. And what it's sort of a partnership, and what IBM can now do is help their customers inject weather data into IoT services. So, for instance, putting weather into your supply chain predictions. Am I going to need snow shovels in the Northeast or in the Midwest? What about this drought condition in California? It's kind of a real-time interaction with weather data, so you can get smart about things like supply chain.
Right. Well, that sounds great. I can't help but be amused by the fact that the Weather Channel is getting into the cloud. That by itself is worth the news. It's an amazing amount of data that the Weather Channel is putting together, and even more so the cars that you mentioned with Ford putting out that much data per hour. So it makes sense that we're starting to filter that data, and that IBM is pretty good at that. But it sounds like a job that's sort of too big for one company, and clearly Weather Channel feels that way since they're splitting their clouds. Are there any other big players in the space? I think Microsoft.
Oh, absolutely.
With Azure, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of skeptical about this. I mean, the details of, this is now a business unit are kind of spongy. It's like over the next 4 years, this is going to be a business unit. And they said they're going to have, 2,000 consultants and researchers and developers dedicated to this. This is IBM. But it was just a couple weeks ago that Microsoft announced an Azure IoT suite. And that was at their Convergence conference that I covered. And it's just a pilot introduction. Is sort of this is early customer preview. They have several customers already they've been working with, and many who have already been using things like Azure Machine Learning Service, for example, which is part of that offering. But their idea is to come up with sort of a crawl, walk, run, three sorts of ready to customize applications for IoT, starting with remote monitoring. This is where you're just learning how to measure remote devices such as cars or weather stations or what have you, and learning how to filter and collect the data and put it into a remote collect data collection. And then you'd move on to sort of a predictive maintenance or an asset management sort of an application, and that would be to control that device in some way, to interact with that device in its remote location. And then finally, it would be a predictive maintenance. That's kind of the most sophisticated, and that's basically taking that monitoring capability, understanding the performance of something. It could be industrial equipment, could be a car, could be a remote weather station, could be an oil well. We've seen application examples of all of those in the real world that are being used today. And then sort of predict a maintenance interval or see that performance is substandard and be able to do something about that remotely. So you don't have to go out to that location where you can alert the customer that their car needs a repair or what have you. And so that's Microsoft's plan. A set of applications that they're developing should be out later this year. But there's several companies that are that are well into this, several years into this. GE is probably the best example. They've been talking about their industrial internet for years and kind of hinging off of their windmill, their wind turbine business, their locomotive business, their energy turbine, power supplier business, and others. They've learned how to do those things with all sorts of industrial equipment, and they're selling that capability, both cloud capability, monitoring, various sorts of software they have to analyze such data. They invested, I think it's close to two years now, in Pivotal, the spinoff of EMC. They invested about $105 million in Pivotal to kind of make use of their data integration, high-scale Hadoop, real-time databases, et cetera, to kind of use that technology in this business. So they're steaming along. Maybe they would partner with an IBM or an Amazon or what have you to provide cloud capacity, but they've got the technology that does the analytics, and that's really where, in my view, most of the action and the interest is. Just storing data is not the important part. The important part is making sense of it, getting the insight. That's what's going to drive the business proposition.
Right. Well, we're running short on time for your segment, Doug, but I want to end with one sort of larger question. If you can give us the short answer of this to sort of get us kick-started on this. Is this the start of an IoT war? There's a lot of big players, GE, Microsoft, IBM, Amazon. Or is the pie big enough for everybody that this is sort of a rising tide floats all boats sort of situation?
Yeah, I think it's floats all boats, definitely. There's going to be a lot of – I don't think it's consolidation time yet. That may come, but it's early days now, and there's plenty of room for experimentation, and I think a lot of companies see this as a real opportunity to really change their business model.
Great. Well, I'm sure you're going to be keeping up with that and all things IoT in the coming weeks. Where should we watch for that? Where should we keep track of what you're doing?
Informationweek.com, and you can reach me at dhenshin on Twitter. And see me on LinkedIn as Doug Henshin.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for joining us today, Doug.
Sure, no problem.
And now that brings us to the section I like to call our ghost story segment. That's when I invite Sarah Peters from our sister publication Dark Reading in to scare us with stories about security. Hi, Sarah. How you doing?
I'm good, Dave. How's it going?
Good. Thanks. Thanks for coming. So tell me, Sarah, what's got me scared this week? I think I read something about companies paying ransoms.
Yeah. Well, it's to me this seems like it's one of those things where people are kind of when they say, "Yeah, I'm asking for a friend," kind of thing. They're being a little less honest. But basically, there was some research out saying 30% of organizations admitted that they would negotiate with cyber criminals for the safe return of their stolen data. If, for example, they were the victims of ransomware and all of their important stuff had been encrypted and locked down, and the bad guy said, "Give me all your money, or we'll delete all of your important stuff, and you'll be ruined forever." And
well, haven't these people watched 24? You're not supposed to negotiate with terrorists.
You're not. But it was funny that 30% said they would, at least to some degree, that they would. They might negotiate depending upon the data. The most likely data that they would negotiate for was the employee personal information or customer personal information. Intellectual property fell a little bit below that, and financial information, I don't mean credit card information, I mean things like how much money the company made, things like that, a lot of which would be public because it was a publicly traded company. That was I think only about 20% of the organizations would pay for that kind of info. But they also said, respondents said that only 30% of them would negotiate, but they said, I think 86% of them said that somebody they knew already had negotiated. So
Ooh.
It was a little, yeah, so that's why I say I think probably they were, there was a little bit of, maybe a little bit of lying, or maybe they were just overestimating their own ethics a bit. And the thing is, what makes it difficult to determine whether or not these numbers are accurate is that they go unreported. Because if there is something like a data breach, let's say that the ransomware attackers, the criminals who use it, maybe their threat isn't give us all your money or we'll delete everything. Maybe their threat is instead give us all your money or we're going to post this publicly for all the world to see. In that case, then it becomes a breach. Then the organization would have to report it just, you know, as far as breach notification law goes. But if it's simply all the data is deleted, or if it's they pay it off and it goes away, that kind of an incident is just like, ultimately, that's like a malware infection. It's a security incident, but it's not required by law for them to report it to law enforcement or for them to report it to their customers or to anybody else. So it's not one of those things that's as easy to keep track of. And most organizations do not think it's something that law enforcement can help them with. So it's kind of oogie, like they don't really like having to deal directly with criminals, because that's kind of scary. It's kind of scary. But one thing that I also found interesting was that they felt that cyber insurance providers should start, as part of their services, should provide a third party to do the negotiating with the cyber criminals. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, maybe I'm really dumb here. But it seems
probably.
Like when you're dealing with something, well, definitely, well, I'm really dumb. But it seems like when you're dealing with something like an electronic file, that you can make an infinite number of copies. I don't see how, if I steal your data, why after I blackmail you and tell you I gave your data back, why I won't just tell you I've got your data all over again until I get another big check.
Well, that's an excellent question. So there's this honor among thieves kind of thing, and there's also this is all financially motivated attackers, right? So it doesn't behoove them to welch basically on their agreement, because then people definitely won't pay up. So they have it now that there are circumstances where somebody pays and they still don't get their stuff back. But for the most part, it seems that when you pay, you get your stuff back and people move on and the cyber criminals go on to the next target and everybody's happy, relatively speaking. Because if they didn't, you know, if they kept hitting the same marks over and over and over again, the whole kind of system would break down. Now, at
right.
some point, maybe the whole thing will break down, but at this point, it seems to be working.
Right. Well, and you get the feeling it's almost easier to move on to the next target because companies are so vulnerable. It doesn't seem that hard to breach people these days.
Exactly. Exactly.
What do the feds or other governments think about this, or is it too early to know? Because I would think that it might be an unhappy thing to think that we're potentially funneling millions of corporate dollars into hacking syndicates so that they can become even more powerful and hack even bigger targets. Is anybody talking about making this illegal?
That's a really good question, and I haven't heard anybody make any kind of statements on that directly. I can tell you that there is a really big movement in the security world right now for more information sharing between the public sector and the private sector, and between governments internationally, because the thought is this is an international problem, and we really cannot adequately deal with it if we're not all telling each other what the problem is. And there has been historically a mistrust with the public sector and the private sector because companies are embarrassed when they're breached or when there's a problem, and they're afraid that if they tell anybody, everybody's going to find out, and then they're going to be shamed for it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's an effort to build that trust and share that information, and so the government is trying to kind of create this kinder, gentler, more have a rap session about it and share your feelings kind of thing happening. And this will definitely be among the things that gets discussed. I don't think at this point I haven't heard it be a specific issue, but I'm sure it will be on. They try to approach in that way first before it becomes a law, if that makes sense.
It does. And there are lots of crimes that people don't mind reporting, and there are some that they do. So it makes perfect sense. So if we can just get this into a place where people are more public about it, that might be enough. Speaking of being public, where can we find you when you're doing your public work on Twitter and elsewhere?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Sarah Peters. That's no H in Sarah. You can follow all of us at Dark Reading, at Dark Reading. That's another easy one to remember. And you should also follow my colleagues. Definitely follow Dark Reading Tim and KJ Higgins and also Marilyn Cahotis. You can find all of us, all of our contacts at darkreading.com.
Sounds great. Well, thanks for being with us, Sarah. You didn't scare me too bad this week.
Yeah, I didn't tell you all about volatile cedar, but I'll tell you about that next week.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't get to that. Maybe I should have.
That's okay.
Maybe
there'll
I should have asked
stuff.
You.
There'll be more on that next time. It sounds like
Save
it sounds like a very terrifying tree.
Well, thanks very much, Sarah.
Thank you. Bye bye.
And that brings us to editorial director Susan Nunziata, who's come to talk to us today about what the iWeek community has been excited about. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dave. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So what are we talking about this week? I think there's been some big fun and some big news this week. What's got the community excited?
Well, as often happens, there's big industry news, which everyone has just heard about from Doug and Sarah. And there's the stuff we like to talk about. And this week, those topics have been robots, goats, and lazy thinking.
Well, let's do some lazy thinking about robots and goats. tell me what you mean by that. I think I remember reading a fantastic goat story this week, but I'd love to hear it from you.
Well, so the news this week that got folks talking was that Amazon is going to introduce a new Amazon Home Services. This is similar to Angie List type services that will help you find a professional such as a plumber or an electrician. And in certain parts of the country, there is also the need to find goat herders who can bring their goats to your property or your municipality to help control vegetation. And so that sparked quite a lively discussion among our community and a few laughs as well, as folks talked about how environmentally beneficial goats particularly can be. But it also talked, the folks who were on the message boards there also talked about how important in general this type of service is and how unpleasant dealing with sites like Craigslist can be and how difficult it can be to find good professional services in your communities. And so I think overall this is going to be an interesting exercise for Amazon. They're sort of going into some of the turf that we've seen filled by startups like Nextdoor, which provides community-based websites and community-sourced referral services. To an extent, they're getting into the Yelp category in terms of enabling people to provide reviews on the types of services they get. But it really is the goats and Amazon enabling the delivery of goats that I think sparked the imagination of many of our readers.
Well, I know when I need to hire a goat, I just sing the Lonely Goat Herd song from The Sound of Music, and suddenly they come running.
yes, and everyone else runs the opposite way, right?
Right. One of the things I found really interesting about this story, as you mentioned, the startups, that Amazon's getting in the startup business, was there any discussion from our community fearing that a big company like Amazon would have difficulty getting into what is essentially the local business?
No, that really wasn't a concern. I think Amazon actually getting involved in this was seen as beneficial to a degree because, you know, as one person put it, after the slime that he's witnessed on Craigslist, it's kind of a good thing that a company with some standards and practices would delve into this area. And Amazon actually has already implemented a pretty thriving local aspect to its services. If you're a customer, they have a program that alerts you by email to offers that are available from local merchants in your area and other types of services that bring it down to a local level. And so I think this can be seen as an extension of that. They've already started to kind of create that outreach.
Right. Well, that sounds good. Well, the only thing that I like more than goats is robots. So tell me, it's clearly our community likes them too. What's going on with robots this week?
Well, we had an overview from Tom Claiborne of robot room service. Now, as you may remember, last year, Aloft Hotels launched a robot that provides delivery services to guests. And a new version of that robot was introduced at another part of the Aloft Hotel chain. They're part of Starwood's hotel empire. And the robot sort of looks like as Tom and some other folks have described it, you know, what R2-D2 might have looked like if Star Wars had been a student film. One person described it as an iPad glued to a trash can. I think what was fun was to see how the community reacted to this, not only in terms of the idea of having it show up at your door, but also what we'd rather see a robot do. And a lot of people said they'd much rather see a robot that came along and cleaned up after people got their room services delivered, because there's nothing worse than walking down a hotel hallway where there's trays of old food kind of scattered about. So a pickup robot, I think, would be much more appreciated than a delivery robot from most of our community members.
I like that. I would also like a robot to turn down my bed at night. I think that would just be a hoot.
And I think to give you a little intro, for those who may not be aware, National Robotics Week kicks off. And so, Dave, you are planning an extensive package of things robot-related. So I wanted to give you a chance to give folks a heads up on what to expect about robots in the weekend.
You know, that's funny because you just read my mind. I was going to ask you if you knew what else was happening with robots this week. April 4th, which is tomorrow through April 12th, is National Robotics Week. We're really excited to bring a lot of coverage to the site around National Robotics Week. We're going to have at least one and sometimes several articles a day from the 4th through the 12th, including some slideshows. And we also have a special radio show, IT Life Radio, on April 8th at 3 p.m. Eastern. We're going to have Aldebaran Robotics here to talk about social robots and the place of social robotics in the workplace, and also just the simple question whether robots are going to take over the Earth. So we're really excited about that, and I hope the community is excited about it as well. With that, Susan, what? Tell me, since we're running out of time, what else are we thinking about is happening this week on iWeek that fans can be excited about?
Well, we're going to be delving into some cloud-based topics in the week ahead. We're also continuing our ramp up to the Interop conference. In fact, there's a rumor going around that I'm currently based in Vegas, which I want to encourage everyone is not true. And there'll be news, of course, from Microsoft and others, you know, through the course of the week. So we'll see what news resonates with our community in the week ahead.
Sounds good. Well, if we want to track you from your secret base in Las Vegas, where can we do that on the social media?
You can find me on the Tweety Pipes at Susan Nunziata, all one word.
Great. Well, thank you for showing up today, Susan, and talking to us about the community. We look forward to having you next week as well.
Great to be here. Thanks, Dave.
Well, and normally, at this is the moment where Kurt would call on me to talk about the Geekend. I'm not going to interview myself on the Geekend, but I can tell you that we have a really exciting Geekend this week. The director of the SETI program, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, has a fantastic plan to find alien life. He says it's high time that we stop just listening for signals from them and we start sending out signals of our own. He wants to beam the entire internet out into space so that anybody who's listening can see the entire contents of the internet. What's exciting about that is not only does it pose chances of finding alien life, but it also means it could kickstart a new network revolution. So that's really exciting. I hope you check that out today. And that's unfortunately all the time we have for today. So before I go, I want to remind you to tune in next week for Information Week Live, 3 p.m. Eastern. Kurt will be back unless he's scored a gig on the runway for Fashion Week. I'd like to thank my guests, Doug Henschen, Sarah Peters, and Susan Nunziata, for sharing their time with us today. And I'd like to thank you guys for tuning in. We couldn't and we wouldn't do this without you, so we're very grateful that you give us a chance to share our stories with you every week. Thanks for coming, and have a great Geekend.